not about your education. It's not about experience. It's not about that. It's truly learning how your mind works. And then rather than you being a slave to your thoughts, that you become the master of your thoughts. So as a servant, your mind is the greatest servant and will provide the means for any experience you want. And I mean literally any experience. But as your mind is your master, it's the absolute, that's the worst tyrant. It will torture you all day. It will torture you all day, every day. And you can catch it out every day, but it will just keep saying the same thing and it'll keep lying. I'll give you an example.
Hi, this is Bruce Lipton, and you're listening to Green Planet FM.
Kia ora, greetings, and welcome to Green Planet FM 104.6. I'm Tim Lynch, and I trust that you are doing well. I invite you to stay with me over the next hour as we discuss and find ways to take care of our unique and magnificent green planet Earth.
A very warm welcome. I'm Liz Gunn, and I'm filling in for Tim Lynch in this program, which is the second part of a two-part interview with a man called Steve Papps, whom I last talked to on this program on September the 8th. The headline for that interview was, Steve Papps, what shapes a once were warrior's child into a man who serves others? There are three companies that Steve runs at the moment in terms of his service to the world, and we'll also in this interview further examine the forces and the life stories that shape Steve. So a very warm welcome to you, Steve Papps.
Hi, Liz. Thank you.
That was a wonderful interview, and it was quite discursive the way we approached it last time. This time I want to begin with a very clear statement of those three businesses that you run, but always with the aim of contributing to a better world, a better health in humans, a better thinking pattern in humans. So could you tell us about the three businesses of Papps, of the Papps companies?
Sure. Well, the three businesses come from my three passions. There's Papps Nutrition, in that we provide nutrition services for individuals. We run seminars for a lot of corporates around the country. And that came from my passion of how nutrition totally affected my life, had totally transformed my health. And there was just a lot of things I didn't know. And so that's why I formed the company. The other company is Life Force Water. So by helping so many clients, there's always one component that was missing, and that was the water, and really understanding how powerful water, what role water plays. Life Force Water, we sell living water to the general public, and the final company is Papps Consultancy. So that's my main passion. That's about just understanding what universe, what reality is, and how we shape our own reality.
I love that, and we'll talk about that, even the idea of living water for many people is quite a novel concept people haven't examined yet.
Yes.
The deeper layers to water, and most of our bodies are made up of water. But within the nutrition and the water companies, there's an essential element. Good food and good water helps better thought patternings, and better thoughts in our brains will make human beings who want to contribute not just to their own back pocket, not just here to make money, but people who want to create a better, more cohesive, more caring world. So there's a great part of your consultancy business that relies on people having good food and good water in their bodies, isn't it?
Yeah, I think it'd go even further in saying having food and having water. What most people eat is not food. It's man-made processed stuff that is commonly called food, but it's not food. It's not living. It wasn't alive. It wasn't here 30 years ago. And as far as in liquids concerned, water, what most people drink, the water that comes from the tap, if people understood what is actually happening in their body when they drink water from the tap, they would stop that immediately, as did I.
All right, let's begin with that water thing then. Let's look at how water is very different if you examine something that is the way nature meant us to drink our water from what many people are buying in bottles. What are the differences, Steve?
Okay, well, the biggest difference with tap water, bottled water, and water that's direct from the ground. So living water has, there's a cycle. People understand the cycle. Water goes into clouds, comes down and goes through the earth. When water falls on the land, goes through the earth, it's like it's juvenile. It's what's called juvenile. It's raw. It's ready to take on all of the minerals in its surroundings. And there's a long journey until it goes through the earth, through the underwater table, and then it naturally bubbles out, and that's when it's ripe. Living water is alive, hence the name, and living water goes off. So if you were to get our water, what you'll find is after about 3 to 4 weeks, and that water will now be green or brown because its life forces, it's gone off, the bacteria has grown, and so it's now completed its life cycle. So obviously that stage, like ripe food that's gone off, now you don't eat it or drink it anymore. The water that's in the supermarkets, the water that comes through your tap, has been chlorinated. And the government does that as a very effective way of getting rid of any waterborne diseases. So obviously we don't want people getting sick. But the process of chlorination kills the life force in the water, and it's toxic to the human body. It affects us on many, many levels.
In what ways, Steve?
Okay, so, well, chlorine is toxic to the body, so nobody goes out and just puts chlorine into the body. It's like having, say, a little bit of rat poison and saying, well, a little bit of rat poison is not going to kill you, so we'll just have a little bit. But what happens is the body doesn't like it. So as far as in the quality of the water is now dead. It's been chlorinated, and the bottled water, that's also been chlorinated, and then it's been filtered out, but the damage has already been done. So none of its life force is left there. None of the bad bacteria is there, which is good, but also none of the good bacteria is good. So that water has now been disinfected. Now, we're taking in that disinfected water into our bodies. Now, when it hits our bodies, what happens is all of our good bacteria and bad bacteria inside of us gets affected by this disinfected water. So now that water goes on to damage all the bad bacteria inside of us, but also all of our good bacteria. And basically, our bacteria is our immune system.
It's so interesting because science would say, oh, the amounts of chlorine in the water can't harm human beings. That's why that amount of water is allowed to go into commercial waters. And technically, perhaps they can get away with that argument. What you're talking about is a more subtle layer, it seems to me, where the structure of the water molecules, this beautiful water you're talking about coming down from the clouds, running down the mountains in waterfalls, going through rocks and picking up minerals, going down into an aquifer, into a water table, and then bubbling up from Mother Earth in this fresh, alive state where, if I'm understanding you right, it's so alive that bacteria are supported to grow after 3 to 4 weeks. That is a measure of how healthy and alive it is.
Yes.
Life can be supported by that water. That's why we drink it fresh. But it's supporting life in our bodies as much as it is in the container if it's left. So then you're saying at these subtle layers, that beautiful alive quality to the water is changed by the introduction of these chemicals.
Well, it's killed. There's no life force left in it. So if you go get a packet of food that's been in the supermarket for, say, 2 months, and you put it in your cupboard and it can last for several months, and then you eat it, obviously know that something's happened in order to keep that, I use the word loosely, that food product safe to consume. So it hasn't gone off. It's still exactly the same as when it was packaged. But every person knows, every culture knows that fresh food goes off. Fresh water goes off, living water, living food goes off. It was once alive. And the key is we want to pass on that life force. That's the power of vegetables, is actually the life force in it. It's biogenicity that's in it. And that gets passed on to the person that consumes it.
That's such a different way to look at water. It's so, it resonates as a truth for me, totally. It makes absolute sense that alive, anything alive that goes into our bodies is going to benefit our bodies.
Oh, absolutely.
So many people now, you see them wandering around with green drinks. Mm. And 10 years ago, people would go, oh, what's that green stuff? Now it's the norm. People are really waking up to, I want green, I want fresh, I want lots of good vegetables from Mother Earth. But it's in fact, the same with water. We need to think about it differently.
The interesting thing is everybody knows to eat more vegetables. In vegetables, you've got all the vitamins and minerals that are absolutely critical for life. You've also got all the phytonutrients. But most of the vegetable is actually living water. Depending on the vegetable, something from 80 to 95% living water. And the rest are the phytonutrients and the vitamins and the minerals. And it's that that makes all the difference.
And yet humans aren't thinking about how also most of our own bodies are living water. What is the makeup of water in our bodies, Steve? And in our brain cells, actually.
Exactly. So if we take the whole sum, we're mostly water. About 70-75% of us is water. And so our bones are water, our muscles are water, our brain is water, our blood is about 84-90% water. Everything, we are basically water itself, and the quality of the water that we consume absolutely affects the quality of the water that is us.
So this idea that if we had fresh living water, fresh living food at all times in our bodies, perhaps this whole degradation of human health, this idea that we have to age, that we have to become rickety and stiff and unwell, that you hear people saying, oh, well, you know, I'm getting older, of course my eyesight's fading. If we had this alive quality to everything we imbibed, took in our bodies, the body would probably not break down at the rate it is at the moment.
Absolutely. So aging is a dehydration process. You'll see it. People start drying up. And it's chronic dehydration over a long period of time. Every person knows that if you go into the country, you meet people living in the country, drinking from, say, a well, eating off the land, they'll have a totally different energy, a totally different vitality about them. And if you have a look at today, the statistics are frightening. We all know people who are either heart disease, cancer, or diabetes. In New Zealand, this is New Zealand, every week, 9 people lose either an arm or a leg because of type 2 diabetes, which is totally related to the food you eat. Type 2 diabetes is not an inherited. Type 2 diabetes is a lifestyle choice. And 9 people every week lose either an arm or leg to that. If we have a look at our state of health, it's totally different from, say, 50 years ago. We're not actually eating foodless. We're not drinking water. We're eating food-like products, and we're just drinking a lot of toxic liquid. And don't even get me started on fizzy drinks.
We may go there. We may go there. I'm warning you. But with the diabetes thing, you mentioned that statistic in the last interview we did on September the 8th, and we talked about Colin, who was one of many people whom you've worked with severe diabetes. And just recap that very briefly. You have seen people who have completely healed their diabetes when, in fact, there is a medical line on diabetes that says there's a certain strain of it that is not related to food, that's purely genetic, and that some diabetics can never be healed. So just to deal with those issues, because anybody coming from that perspective will be howling right about now, saying you can't claim that diabetes is all food-related, some of it's genetic. Where do you stand with that, Steve?
Type 2 diabetes is your pancreas is not working, is malfunctioning. Type 1 diabetes is inherited. And according to the medical fraternity, neither can be healed, because the term being cured or being healed means that it can't come back. But type 2 diabetes obviously can come back if you go back to the lifestyle choices that created it. So according to that definition, sure, it's not healed because it can come back. Colin, he no longer has any of the symptoms, any of the blood work of a person that has diabetes. So if he was to go get a test now and a doctor didn't know him, was to have a look at his results, and Colin was to ask him, do I have diabetes? The doctor would say, well, no, you don't. Does it mean that it can't come back? No, of course it can come back. I can help anybody get diabetes. Not that I would.
By what? By putting them on the fizzy drinks you talked about.
Just nutrition. That's how they do all the experiments with rats. They get them obese and they see what drugs work with them. So it's not hard to get people obese. I mean, they're doing it quite well by themselves at this stage.
Let's address that full on, because there may be many people who have diabetes in their families, and this is novel stuff. So they, in a way, they've got themselves into this situation. you yourself used to do drugs when you had a difficult early start to life. You had a poor diet. You were massively overweight at one stage, quite overweight.
I prefer big bone, but that's
fine. So you've turned you're talking experientially. You yourself have turned your own lifestyle around. Talk to somebody who's got three or four diabetics in the family and they're thinking it's genetic and they're thinking it's hopeless. What would you want them to start looking at, Steve?
Even if they talk to their GP will tell them they need to change their nutrition. How far you can go with nutrition is absolutely amazing. So without food, you wouldn't be alive. So every cell requires, stays alive based on the food you eat, the water you drink, and the air that you breathe. So these are the critical factors of our life, of our life force, our health, our vitality. Our premise is that disease is an expression of toxicity or acidity. And so when a person is toxic, which most people are, then mild levels of toxicity or acidity, part of me, can show up as skin issues, maybe insomnia. High levels of toxicity can express itself as diabetes, where the pancreas is malfunctioning, as gout. Now,
And I'm going to cut in there, and possibly as desperate depression as well, psychologically. Toxicity affects the whole way the brain functions.
Well, everybody knows that. You have some coffee, you start feeling better. So every food you eat, everything you drink affects your brain chemistry 100%. So when you start dealing with that, what happens is, that's why we've often heard a person that they've got cancer and then they cut out the tumour, which they call that the cancer, and then they say, we've got it. And then maybe a year or 5 years later, it comes back. The cancer was never gone. They never addressed the cause, like what causes the cancer. That's what I'm concerned about. And my thought process has always been, if one person can heal from a terminal illness, then there must be a way for all of us. I want you to understand the process, and my whole focus isn't about which theory is right. I haven't got time for that. My whole focus is getting the result, because we're dealing with people, real people with real lives who've got real problems, and they need to get well. They need to get well for themselves and for their families. So as far as in which theory, we deal with results, and we see those measurable results. We see people working with their doctors, coming off all of their medications, such as Colin. We work with people who's supposed to be dead right now, and various cancers who are still alive, touch wood. And so that's the area that we're dealing with. I'm not interested in having debates with doctors. I have zero interest in that.
Touching wood, and also giving them very, very concrete programs to follow. It's not just a matter of luck. Those people you know who were told, one woman in particular I know, who was told that she had 1 month left to live, and now 6 months later she's fine, she's thriving. It's the story of Colin. For people who are interested, you can go back to the September the 8th broadcast. You went into quite a bit of detail about how he cured that diabetic problem he had. But if you were walking into the family of that, say, four or five members with diabetes, and they were about to sit down for a breakfast of, let's say, cornflakes and lots of toast and some sugary jam, what would you say to them? Just a piece of advice for starting off.
Stop.
It's easy.
Stop. The quickest and easiest point of advice would be eat living food. The majority of their food needs to be vegetables, and their requirements for carbohydrates, and they don't have a requirement for carbohydrates. They have a requirement, and that's not mean that carbohydrates are bad by any means, but their pancreas is not working due to the amount of carbohydrates that they've had. So in that particular situation, it would be primarily based around vegetables. In fact, all of our clients are. And then the rest of their food intake would be around living food in the form of protein and healthy fats. And their whole situation, I promise you, would 100% change, absolutely change.
It's fascinating. In another interview that Tim Lynch did on this in this series with Scott McIndoe from Legacy, Scott wants every New Zealander to be able to draw fish from our oceans, kai moana.
That's beautiful.
It is. And one of Scott's passionate arguments is that Middlemore Hospital is full of people who can't afford to buy fish. It's become a luxury item, often shipped off to overseas markets. And New Zealanders are missing out on the very thing that could give them the health and stop all these limbs being cut off because of diabetes. And you would agree with that?
Absolutely. Yeah.
So the living water and the beautiful living foods can really affect people's lives, and you've seen that, Steve.
Yeah, we don't have to go out I was talking to a young gentleman today, and student, he's broke, and he's going through one of our, he just decided to go through one of our nutrition programs. And I said to him, he said, well, what sort of foods can you give me an example? There's nothing exotic. You don't have to go to the other side of the earth. You don't have to get special fruit or vegetables or antelope. You know, there's nothing special. It's real food. And then it's the right amount of foods for each individual, specific to what they're trying to achieve. But it just goes back to primarily vegetables, then the right amount of protein, right amount of fats, and the right amount of carbohydrates for that individual.
Why are the fats so important?
Well, there's two food groups that are essential. That's what scientists call essential. You must have it, otherwise you're going to be unhealthy. And your body can't produce it, so you must get it from an outside source, hence your food. The two essential food groups are called essential amino acids, which is another word for protein, and essential fatty acids, which is essential fats. So every cell needs these fats in the right quantity. Now, it's mind-blowing what's happening now. As I often tell new clients, we're in a unique stage of our life, we're in a population where we're totally overfed yet malnourished. So we've got an excess amount of calories, but we've got nowhere near enough nutrients. And a lot of that, by the way, unfortunately, is by design. The manufacturers will totally overprocess foods, take out all the nutrients, because when you're hungry, when the body says, I'm hungry, what it's saying is, feed me nutrients. So by deliberately taking nutrients out of, say, a lot of products, and I don't know if you've had this experience, I know I've had many times where I'm eating, I've had a lot of food, this is a past life, by the way, and and then I can't eat anymore. And somebody offers me some food, I go, look, I can't eat another, I can't even look at food. And yet 5 minutes later, I see myself dipping into a bag of chips. Yes. And I think to myself, what's wrong with me? So even though I've got excess amount of calories, there's no nutrients. So my body's still sending signals saying, feed me nutrients. But what I'm eating is man-made processed foods that have very little, if any, nutrients. And it's the same with fat. So at the same time, we're getting all these fats. Now, there's two types of fats. There's fats that will heal you and fats that will kill you. They're the opposite. Now, the fats that will kill you, absolutely stay away from. But it's the fats that will heal you, you need.
Tell us how to tell, then. Give us an idea.
Oh, so the fats that should be you should be consuming, you can find in olive oil, high-grade, cold-pressed, organic olive oil. Coconut oil, you'll find it in egg yolks. Avocado is a superfood, an absolute superfood. Raw nuts, raw almonds. All these sort of fats are the fats that your body requires.
And the fats that we should run screaming from, Steve?
Hydrogenated fats, so fats that are false fats, man-made fats. Margarine and stuff like that. All your vegetable oils, soybean oil, canola oil, all of this is absolutely toxic to the body.
Wow. And these are, I loved what you said earlier, these are experiential things you've learnt through not only helping others, but through what you talked about in the last interview, becoming a bodybuilder, having been overweight, becoming deeply interested in, through that, the functioning of the body, how to make it into a prime state.
Sure.
You've done all this through action, haven't you?
Yeah, well, what happened was, when you stand up on stage in your underwear, basically, They don't care what your theory is. They don't care if you go, look, I know I don't look great, but let me show you my theory. They only care about performance and results. And my whole life is all about results. And I became fascinated, absolutely fascinated, because of the way I wanted to do bodybuilding. Naturally, I could never compete against a lot bigger guys. So I had to get leaner than them. And this is coming from a guy who never had abs. So I outsmarted them in the kitchen. And I was coached by the best in the country as well. That's where I got a lot of my knowledge. And then there's a lot of theory. And this is the most conflicting thing you can read in magazines. In the same magazine, they'll say, for example, don't have too much, just a random example, don't have too much carbohydrates because of this. And two articles later, you're going, you should have a high amount of carbohydrates because of this.
Yes.
And they both make sense.
In theory.
And what I found is that with a lot of these theories, a lot of these practices, and I wanted to know, like I needed to know for myself. So I would put myself through the process for extended period of time to see what were the benefits. Was it as what they said? What were the what were the problems with that particular dietary regime? And then was there a point of diminishing returns? And that was a big difference, is that a lot of things were actually on point with what they were theorizing the results, but there's a point of diminishing returns. And so as an example, is 1 hour of exercise good for you? Yeah, it is. It's fantastic. But 24 hours of exercise is not good for you. So there's a point of diminishing returns. So people make these statements as exercise, or especially with food, as a general statement, but there's a point of diminishing returns with each theory, and then it's just about there's certain principles at play, though, with all with everybody.
I love that about you. I remember you telling me once that you think you've gone on every single food plan that's ever been invented. You really do. You've really looked into them, and that is why you've been able to distill down the most useful, the most potent way for a human being to access high levels of health relatively quickly.
Yeah, and for that particular goal as well. So there's different protocols for different goals. So it's a completely different protocol for somebody who wants to, say, sports performance to somebody trying to get over diabetes. You know, the Absolutely. Principles, though, are the same as far as in that they both should be eating living food and drinking living water. How much and why, that's according to the individual and to their goal. Yeah.
Now let's go from those two, the water and the food, into the equally important side, perhaps even more so, the mental toughness one needs to make substantial change in life. If we want to grow as human beings on this life journey, and we really want to find why we're here and what we're about, what is it that PAPS Consultancy offers, and how have you come to that, Steve?
How have I come to it? Pain and mistakes, I think that's over a long period of time. It's not discipline. Discipline is something that's applied very short term. It's awareness. Awareness is the key word. When you're aware of something, it's no longer hard. I'll give you an example. So let's say you're going to start a new diet, and we have people coming to us and they go, yeah, like, I'll give this a go. And the way they said it, if they were to say it like that, I know they're not ready. I know that they go, okay, I'll give it a go. You know what I'm talking about?
Absolutely, yeah.
So the thing is, they have to
There's a sort of defeat already locked into that statement. Or
yeah,
that
they're vibrating in the wrong frequency, you could say, if you want to use quantum physics, or they're in the wrong state. They need to be in the state that would match the result. So they're definitely not in the state there. Now, I have people coming in every week and they're telling me how hard, you know, like how difficult it is. And they say stuff, well, you know, Steve, like it's just all this shopping and preparing. But like I explained to them, shopping is actually not hard. You know, you hop in an air-conditioned car, you go to an air-conditioned shop, you don't have to carry all your food, you don't have a spare and hunt it down in the supermarket, you just put it in the trolley, you know what I mean? And cooking's even easier. I mean, you take it out of a packet that's in your home, you put it in a fry pan, and 5-10 minutes later, you know, you've cooked your meat or your fish or whatever it is. Anything longer, you're killing it, and you likely fry some vegetables. So it's not like it's heavy or hard, but it is hard if they don't want to do it, if they're in the wrong state of mind. But that same person, once we go through what they're finding difficulty, I highlight to them that actually if they change their consciousness around what they want to do, which means they have to actually truly want what they say they want and not be a victim when they start to live in the habit patterns of the person that would have their goal. For example, if we're talking about nutrition, one of the key habit patterns is to prepare your own food. As I tell each person, there's some basic things we should master as an adult. We should learn to bathe ourselves, you know. We don't get our parents to do it. I'm a 47-year-old man. I should be able to do that myself. I should be able to bathe myself, dress myself. I should be able to cook for myself. And I'm worth that investment. I tell people, you're worth that investment. One of the stories I give to people to help them really understand this, as I say to them, look, imagine if this is going to be true. Imagine if I said to you, keep to your plan exactly for the next 6 weeks. And let's just say it was a made-up story, and I said to you, if you keep to the plan exactly, like absolutely exactly, regardless of the result, keep to the plan, I will give you $10,000 at the end of 6 weeks. So at the end of 6 weeks, you get $10,000. I'm going to put in some hidden cameras. I'm going to have spies everywhere. You eat one thing. You taste one thing. So help me, you're not getting the $10,000. I show you the money. It's in the briefcase. We've signed it in front of some lawyers. So this money is basically yours. Now I say to the person, all right, now just pretend this is real. Now, imagine if I said that to you, Liz, and I said, okay, so this is real, and the money's right in front of you. Now, how do you feel about how hard shopping is? Is shopping hard?
No, absolutely not.
What That's about that brilliant. Ice cream that you got to have? Is it a problem now?
I think the 10,000 kind of outweighs the ice cream. I'm going to buy a lot of ice cream later on.
Now, imagine this. Let's say your biggest thing wonderful. Was, oh, I just got to go out, you know, I need to have need to socialize with my friends. Now, if this was true and your friends came over and go, oh, let's go out, immediately, without even thinking, there's no planning, there's no discipline, and that's what I mean, no discipline, you just go, no, I don't want it, it's fine. They go, let's go out, why don't you have some ice cream with us? We've got your favourite ice cream. No, I'm fine. You don't even want it. There's not the want in there, because your awareness is different. Now your focus isn't on what you can't have, because we always move towards what we focus on. Whether we're focusing on not wanting it or wanting it, we always go towards that. And so now your focus, your attention, your awareness is on what you want. Most people, when they're setting their goals, they've set a goal, but they're focused on what they don't want. And you move towards where you focus.
That is brilliant, Steve. Because we have this complaining little child mind in some ways. This, as you say, this little child that a week into a really healthy eating regime goes, oh, I'll come out with friends and they're all having a glass of wine. I'll have a glass of wine. It's not like I've had a glass of wine for the last week. And suddenly you've let your own goals down because this little undisciplined one inside. But you're right. It's not about discipline.
It's about wanting it so much, isn't it?
It's some basic
understanding of how the mind works.
So explain it's like this. Take us into it.
Well, imagine if I didn't, we're back in caveman days, and then each of us had to have a card and pull that around with us wherever we went. That was the law of the land, is we're cavemen. And we didn't know anything better, so each of us is dragging this car around, basically towing it around the place, and we can't get very far because the car's quite heavy, right? And then somebody like me comes around and goes, oh, No, you're supposed to hop in it, and I'll show you how to drive it. And if you hop in it and drive it, not only is it a lot better, a lot faster, a lot more comfortable, it's a lot easier as well. But you go, that's you're talking nonsense now. So a lot of self-help stuff is actually a misunderstanding, a true misunderstanding of how the mind works. You don't need discipline. You do need to understand how the mind works, and then you apply those principles in each area of your life, whether we're talking about nutrition, whether we're talking about your relationships, whether we're talking about money. It's all the same principles, and people are making the same mistake in each area of their lives, and then they apply goal setting, they apply, which is fine by the way, and they apply positive thinking, they apply discipline. But I tell you what that life is like, it's a battle, it's hard, and you're constantly trying to manage. See, in the story that I told you, it sounds quite simple, but imagine this, are you applying any discipline? You're out with friends having a great time and they go, oh, just have some alcohol. You just go, no, it's fine, no, I'm good. Yeah, alcohol, I'll be a sober driver today. You're not managing that. You're already spending the $10,000 in your mind, right? I mean, you already know what shoes you're going to buy. You know where you're going. Everything's nice and clear. That's the only thing you can think about because you've accidentally fallen into the right process of how to achieve goals.
That's beautiful. So now let's translate that over to work. Somebody who's in a job and they're dragging the car behind them. In other words, I've got to get going, I've got to make this job work, it's not what I want to do, but you know, it's just life is tough. You know, my dad always said, you've really got to struggle through these jobs you don't like, and one day I'll retire and I'll have a really good life, but right now this is how it is. It's like this for everybody, it's reality. Okay, so they're the cavemen dragging the car behind them. You come up and say, actually, you can get in the car, there's a lot more flow to life, I can offer you some flow. How do you do that, Steve?
So with the $10,000 analogy, what that person is doing is they're going after something that they want. Yes. The goal is big enough for their focus, to take their focus. So most people, their lives, they've been conditioned to accept life. They haven't designed what they want, so they don't have that big thing. So for me, my advice can seem quite reckless, but I want a totally unrealistic life. I want a totally unrealistic impact on people. I want a totally unrealistic lifestyle, totally unrealistic income. And so that comes from not having realistic thoughts or average thoughts. That's having from a totally unrealistic mindset and unrealistic expectation of myself as well. So it all needs to tie in. If you've got unrealistic goals but you're lazy, well, that's not, you know, that's just denial. So, and when people say you have to be realistic, my question is, well, which realistic? Because you're realistic. Because if I talk about my goals, my most outrageous goals, for somebody else, it's just their normal day-to-day reality. So whose reality are we talking? What's realistic? Because I know people, we all know people who don't have the education, never had the network, maybe not even as their first language, gone through bankruptcy, who are living the most amazing lifestyles in different places around the world. We all know the odd person or herd of people like that. So it's not about your education, it's not about experience, it's not about that. It's truly learning how your mind works, and then rather than you being a slave to your thoughts, that you become the master of your thoughts. So as a servant, your mind is the greatest servant and will provide the means for any experience you want. And I mean literally any experience. But as your mind is your master, it's the worst tyrant. It will torture you all day. It will torture you all day, every day. And you can catch it out every day, but it will just keep saying the same thing and it'll keep lying. I'll give you an example. So when you, let's say you're to food, this is what the mind does that is totally out of control, which is most people. So when a person is talking about nutrition, they're unhappy with their food and they're eating, say, a bit of rubbish and they're thinking, I need to stop this. I need to get back on that diet. What's wrong with me? I've got no willpower. I've got to get on to diet. That's what I do. I'll start next week, Monday, because obviously international start day is Monday. So I'm going to start my diet on Monday, and then I'm going to really get into it. And the mind goes, yeah, yeah, because you're totally undisciplined. And look at you. And so in our head, it makes sense. But then we start the diet. We start the nutrition. That we see that when we do this, we'll be happy, right? Then we start it on Monday. After the initial honeymoon period is over, then the mind goes, why can't I have this other food? Like, why can't you have a little bit of freedom? This is unrealistic. You can't keep eating like this. In other words, when you're on that side, it's complaining. And when it's on this side, it's complaining. And you think that by listening to it, then you'll then they'll stop complaining. It won't. So then what happens is you're going, you're right. I need to eat a little bit of junk food. So then you eat some junk food. Now, the same mind that said that you should do it then says, I knew you were weak. Why did you do that? Right?
It's why the Buddhists call it the monkey mind. It's a little monkey. It jumps from side to side.
It's like the worst best friend. It's the best friend that gets you in trouble and then says, why did you do that? And you go, because you told me to. So this is a mind totally out of control. And it's not a discipline. It's an awareness thing. So most people don't know. Most people are not even aware that there's a continuous story going on in the background. They're not even seeing reality. There's events that are happening, then there's their story about what is happening, and then they call that reality. It's not reality. It's their story about what they observe.
That is such a good answer. If we are not our minds, though, Steve, what else are we? What else is on offer to human beings? If that little monkey isn't the thing that defines us, how do we find a place in us that has more freedom?
Oh, we're free. We just don't realize that we are. So there's a infinite consciousness is who I am, pretending to be this form, so I can experience this drama. But it's not what it looks like. The physical world isn't what it appears to be.
For someone who's curious to begin that journey into it, is there a way that you can just stop for a moment and observe your thoughts? Observe the way the mind jumps around, just the way you told that story, and then ask, what is observing?
Yeah, the easiest thing is to listen to your thoughts. Just listening to your thoughts without judging your thoughts. Like, don't have a thought then think, I shouldn't think that, because that's a thought about your thought.
It's clever, isn't it?
Well, it's like most people's anxiety is not even the thing. They can deal with the thing. Whatever a person is going through, they can deal with the issue at the time. But you can't deal with anxiety because it doesn't exist. Anxiety is a projected future. You can't deal with a ghost. That's why it's devastating. And then with people with anxiety also tend to, they get anxious, that they're getting anxious.
Yes.
So the event of itself is very small. The person can deal with it quite quickly and quite easily, and quite effortlessly, by the way. But what happens is when a person starts getting out of control is when they start losing themselves and getting stressed and depressed, is they're getting upset. They're getting anxious about the anxiety. And then they want to deal with the anxiety. There's a totally different way of looking at all of that.
They're having a thought about a thought, and it starts to compound.
Yeah.
So this PAPS consultancy helps humans to observe the thoughts, which is a pathway to freedom. But you also seem to help people create the changes, even where the thought patternings might be arising that seem resistant. There are ways, as you say, to change the very essence of the energy we hold, so that we come to it through a different pathway. Can you talk a little bit more about that, Steve?
I'll talk about something that's really practical. So, for example, addictions. Addictions are a very interesting topic, very emotional with people, because they have the addictions, and the addictions are real, absolutely real. The addictions are a product of the story that is going on in their mind. Whatever the substance is, or whatever the thing they're addicted to, if it's a substance, abuse can be out of the body within days or even weeks at the longest. So as far as an abuse is concerned. And I'll give an example. I was with a relative who was addicted to marijuana, and all of his life, and been in and out of rehabs. And he had the normal cycle. His normal cycle would, he'd suffer with this addiction, and then after about 3 or 4 years, he'd have enough of it, like truly had enough of it. He'd seek out professional help. He'd go into rehab. He'd come off it. He'd go through that process, and his body would detox and go through all these things. And then he'd be fine. Unfortunately, he didn't understand the power of his environment. He'd go back to his old environment, and then within a short period of time, he was back into that addiction, because those habit patterns of the people who made triggers were there. So I was talking to him one time. We're having lunch, and he was actually in a rehab at the time. We were talking about for lunch, and I was explaining this to him, and he kindly told me that I didn't know what I was talking about. I asked him about his how's it going with his rehab, and he said it's fine, you know, but I just got to take it one day at a time, you know, being an addict. And I said, well, you're not an addict, it's just a label. And he goes,
wow.
What are you talking about? I said, well, once you have a label, you have to live through those labels. I said, what does the person taking you through, what is he saying about you getting over this completely and not having a problem with it? He goes, oh, no, I'll have to fight this for the rest of my life. And I said, oh, okay.
Yes.
I said, so would you like a different way where you don't actually have to, because it's not like that? Again, he told me in not so nice words that I didn't know what I was talking about. But I asked him a few questions to prove a point, and I just said to him, if you had an accident, knocked your head, and went into a coma, but the coma was only an hour, you came back out, and you totally lost your memory, right? You lost your memory. Would you have your addiction? And he said, what? I said, if you lost your memory, would you have your addiction? And imagine this. Imagine you've woken up. It's only an hour later, but I convince you it's 10 years later. Now, you have no history, right? What happens if I said to you, you used to be the self-made successful businessman. Everything you touch financially turned to gold. Now, all that money's gone. Your ex-business partner's gone. He's out of the country. All your money's gone. But this is who you used to be. What would happen? What would you end up doing? Who would you become? You'd you would end up having to fulfill that label.
That's fascinating.
Yeah. So you can't have an addiction without a memory. Interesting, eh?
It makes the mind reaction meltdown. The label is not serving. The label does not serve.
We fulfill our labels. So you call yourself an addict, you absolutely are. And that's not about not identifying your behavior right now. I'm not talking about that. I'm saying that once you have a label, then you have to overcome that. So if you have a label such as, I remember my teenage kids when they were young, and they'd come home, bring a report and show me their scores. And I used to go, oh, that's fantastic. You know, I always want them to get better grades. And I used to remind them constantly that their grades are important for them. I would prefer they get better grades. But when they grow up, their money is their money. My money is mine. So whatever they do is their business, you know. And I talked to them once about how to get A's in any subject. And it went along the lines of, they were, I don't know, 13 or 14, and I said to them, what's your worst topic? What's your worst subject? What subject don't you like? And let's say mine, in my case, was English. And so they named their worst subject, and I said, what's your favourite subject? And they said, "What's this?" I said, "Okay. You know, with your favourite subject," so my son's was like PE or something. I said, "You know, with your favourite subject, when it's the next subject, let's say you're just finishing a period and now you're going to go to your next period, which is your favourite subject, it's PE. What do you think? What are you thinking of when you're going to the PE? Are you happy? Are you sad?" I'm like, "No, I'm happy. I'm looking forward to it." That's interesting. Now, with your subject that you don't like, let's say it's English, pardon me, when that's your next subject, what are you thinking? Maybe you're thinking, "I'm not even going to go to class," right? You're not looking forward to it. They go, no, "I'm not looking forward to it." And I said, "Well, why don't we do a deal? I'm not sure if I'll do it, but maybe I will." I said to him, "Why don't I get out $1,000 and in your next grading, your worst subjects, if you get an A, you get $1,000. And they go, "Oh, okay." I go, no, I'll make it $10,000. And they're going, "Serious?" I said, "Well, I haven't made up my mind."
The money bribing thing really works, Steve.
What's the focus? The money's irrelevant. It's a focus. And I said to them, just explain to me if this was real. I'm saying it is. Just explain to me, how would you now feel about English? I love it. What about missing class? I'm missing the other class. I won't miss English, right?
Yes.
What about at home? Do you do much English homework now? None. What would you do now? I'd be doing English.
Yes.
And so what happens is, as your attention moves towards what you want, you get where your awareness is. Most people, when they set goals, it looks like they're actually going towards their goal. They're not. And when they're setting a goal, like a salesperson, about making X amount of dollars, they actually focus on all the sales they're not making. And what happens if it doesn't work?
Isn't that, and isn't that a truth that can then cross over into relationships as well? People who are wanting a beautiful relationship, and you hear them talking about how they're so unhappy in a relationship, they'll list everything that's wrong instead of looking at all the things that they really want to move towards. Mm. This crosses everything, doesn't it?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. It's the perception in each year of their life is actually all back to front. So we have a lot of people come to us in nutrition about dropping weight, of course. Our whole thing is getting them focused on having energy like a child, like a young child is 10. That's how we should be as adults. That's the amount of energy we naturally have. But because of the toxicity, and we don't actually have that. So I talk to people about getting their health back, getting their energy back, getting huge amounts of energy from early hours of the morning to late at night, having that sort of life force in them. And as a byproduct of that, sure, you'll have abs, but that's the smallest part of it. So it's about changing that whole focus, because when you focus on, say, dropping X amount of fat in X amount of weeks, you'll make the not smartest of decisions. And it's the same with relationships. It's about if you can't enjoy your own company by yourself, why do you think other people are going to enjoy your company when you don't enjoy your own company? So the first thing is to understand yourself and enjoy your own company, and then other people will seek that company out too. But we tend to just project and deflect our own issues onto other people and relationships.
And when you work in the corporate sector, when you're working with businesses that want to set big goals, it's again the same story as that little child of yours in the school classroom with the English class, isn't it? Yeah. It's moving towards what you really want all the time.
What they really, really want. And also, most companies have not set a goal. The most fundamental things, if you're a small business owner and you're listening to this, do you have a clear financial goal for next week? Not what you think you can do. Like, yes. I normally turn over X amount of $1,000 per week. I'm not talking about that. Have you actually sat down and go, this week, this is what's going to happen. This month, this is what's going to happen. Have you actually put some time into that? So most people don't even set goals. They've got a fuzzy idea of where they're going to end up this week based on what happened last week and the week before.
And this is from your own lifestyle, as I keep saying, your own life choices, your own life experiences. You've been to the very depths and the heights, Steve. Yeah. We didn't quite cover all of that in the last interview. So let's go back to what your learning has come from, which is your own life.
Sure.
So we were talking about how you had quite a lot of success in this business that you began as a young 19-year-old with family on the way, and you had to, actually you already had children by 19.
I have three.
You had three by 19. Yeah. So as you said last time, you had no choice. You had to find the money to feed those hungry mouths. You did very well, and then you hit a wall. And you found that you needed to pull back from that business. You were overworking, probably adrenally burnt out. Mm. At this stage of your life, you weren't eating well. You weren't aware of how food affects energy. And then you got into security, and we didn't really go further into it because we diverted off into other subjects in the last interview. Tell us about the security business that you got into and how you created that as a massive success.
So I became a store detective, catching shoplifters undercover. And most shoplifters, by the way, just normal people. It's not what you think. And so for me, it was like a bit of hide and seek, actually. I really enjoyed that work. And then I started my own company based on just reading a lot of self-help books. And I just thought to myself, well, how hard could it be? You know, all these books say that you can start from nothing and do great things. So I was fully into that sort of mindset and goal setting. So I started my store detective business. Within a year, it was the largest store detective business in New Zealand. So we had undercover officers throughout the country and worked with all the major retailers. That was great. And I stumbled.
And you were an early adopter, weren't you, of cameras and technology?
Years
also.
Later. So it was actually a few years later. So what happened was I had a nice lifestyle. We had a nice home in Albany. I had a nice Mercedes. I took holidays. Things were nice. And that's going back to about 2004. So income was okay. I think it was about 130,000 back then. So there was a few dollars back then. Everything was comfortable.
And just to recap, this is from a background of privation, of nothing, of growing up in South Auckland and having, as we called it last time, a once were warriors kind of childhood of great uncertainty.
Yeah.
So you were a self-made man by then.
Yes, I was quite unhappy, actually, because for me, all these self-help books that said, if you set goals, if you do this and that, follow the process, you'd get here. Now, where I wanted to be was I set a goal of being a millionaire, but I was definitely not that by any means. I was very comfortable, but definitely not that. And it wasn't about the money, but there was a measuring stick for me. And then I ran into some things about it was an old videotape when I used to watch videotapes, right? And this was on Bob Proctor, a great gentleman. And he talked about law of attraction, law of vibration, and some basic quantum physics. And it just made so much sense to me. And I was so enthralled by what I was learning from this videotape that I looked him up. And this is back in 2004. So he happened to be doing a seminar a few months later in Aussie. So I flew over to Australia to meet him and did his seminar. And years later, he ended up being one of the main people on the movie The Secret that a lot of people have gone to watch. But this is quite a bit of before all of that time. So when I went to the seminar, a lot of things clicked. A lot of things just all fell into place because there was a lot of contradictions for me. I'd read self-help books and I was saying, if you need to set goals and you'll do this. And so I'd set goals, but I knew a lot of people are very successful didn't set goals. They talked about being positive, you know, having a positive mental attitude, which of course is great. But I knew some very negative, not so nice people who were very wealthy. So if we're talking about wealth, it's like says in the book Think and Grow Rich by Napoleon Hill. He says, if you think morality and hard work leads to riches, you're mistaken, it doesn't. There's specific laws that apply to wealth. There's specific laws that apply to relationships. Now, if you understand these laws and apply them, and the exact laws, then you can have as much wealth and as much enjoyment in relationships as you want. And in his book, he says, and when and if you ever find these laws and you apply it, because when it comes to wealth, it'll turn out wealth will come into your world in such a torrent that you'll wonder where it's been hiding all these lean years. And I remember that one line. I was thinking, well, that's how I like some wealth, like a torrent. The following year, I made my first million and several million more by applying those principles.
And then you hit a wall. And what was that wall, Steve?
Yeah, it's a misapplication of the same principles. So one thought is like a seed. A seed, you can plant two seeds right next to each other, right? And one is an orange seed, one is an apple seed, right in the same soil, the same universe. One will produce oranges, one will produce apples from the same universe. Every thought's a seed. It sets off a specific energy, a specific vibration, and each vibration has an exact result that matches it. So the seed that started the end of it all was just don't screw this up.
Wow, which is such a low vibration.
Yeah.
And from that, what happened?
Oh, I tuned into all the right people to steal, literally steal, to take advantage. And I found myself in situations where the decisions I was making matched that. So it's almost like this. Let's say you've got a red wine or you've got a coffee and you're going through a crowd and you're going, okay, just don't spill this on my nice white shirt. Right?
Yes.
So you're going to take all the actions and you're going to be very, very careful. But that wine or that coffee will end up on your shirt. It will end up. Even though the actions that you're taking are in one direction, you'll always end up where your energy is.
And that energy for you, just to bring this to a close today, because it's been a wonderful talk about the work that you do, but that energy for you at that stage took you through depression, which many people will relate to, in New Zealand particularly. We have a massive issue with that at the moment. What did that depression teach you, Steve?
It taught me the main thing was to let go, and also that that pain was needed for myself. So if you want a breakthrough, something must break. And so I broke, and what I mean by that is when you break, two things happen: you break and destroy yourself, or you break through. I end up breaking through. So anybody going through that, it's a resistance of what is happening in your world. That's the issue.
That's the break and destroy yourself, when you're resisting what's happening, when you accept, when you open to it. Well, as unattractive as it may feel at the time.
Yeah. When you start understanding, so for example, when I drive home now, I'm in Point Chev, and I'm going to hop on the motorway. And the motorway, that I'm going to take a turn out of here, right? Now, I'm going in the exact opposite direction of where my home is on the shore. But I don't have faith that I'm going to get home. I don't panic and think, oh, I'm going in the wrong direction, because I'm aware that that's the right direction. If I take a straight line home, I'm going to smash into that building that I can see right next to me. I don't take a straight line. But in our mind, we think that our goals are A, B, and C, straight line. It's not like that. And we don't understand how to have certain experiences. So if you have a look back in your life, in all of our lives, you look at some of the worst circumstances, actually was the most necessary things to give us the greatest insights and the greatest opportunities. But we didn't know it at the time. And so we resist that. And so that's why we have a lot of problems, because we're not going down the path that is before us. And we play a victim, ourselves as a victim game. But even though I'm going what appears to everybody else in the exact wrong direction, I understand that this is the right direction, because I'm aware of where it all leads.
Isn't that a fascinating note to end on, that the resistance to the way life shows up and the way life's showing up and our resistance to it is where all pain is. Whereas if we could accept life is showing up this way and I'm going to surrender to this, the way it's showing up.
Absolutely surrender, but become aware of how to change that experience. You know, you don't want to have all that pain and all that, say, negative stuff in your life. But you can't move until you actually want to accept where you are. Then the awareness will open up of how to change that.
And that's very much what PAPS Consultancy is about. Wonderful talk with you, Steve PAPS of PAPS Consultancy and PAPS Nutrition and Life Force Water. A terrific overview, and I could easily have talked for another hour. Thank you, Steve.
Thank you, Liz.
Thank you. Lovely.
Very, very good.
That was really, there's a lot in that, Steve. Yes, wow, that was.
I invite you to be able to come to greenplanetfm.com, where we have over 400 interviews in our database, which you can readily download and listen to be able to inspire yourself to become the change you want to see in the world and become involved in caring for your children and grandchildren's future. We are also on Facebook, on Green Planet FM and ourplanet.org. Please come and love us. This is Tim Lynch.
And or Lisa Eyre. And Liz Gunn.
In the spirit of Aroha, wishing you a wonderful week. We look forward to being with you next week. I say kia kaha and haere rā.